you are given an ECG that shows anterior T-wave inversion. As you look closer, the T-wave inversion begins in lead V1 and extends to lead V3 or V4. The T-waves are symmetrically inverted. Is this ischemia? Is it Wellen syndrome? Or is it something else? My purpose in presenting this brief ECG audio pearl is to help avoid missing the most common something else that anterior symmetric T-wave inversion could be, and that is acute PE, acute pulmonary embolism. Now, seeing the ECG and getting a good history is everything. For example, if the T-wave inversion is diffuse and deep, that is, well over 5 millimeters and approaching 10 millimeters in depth in at least a few of the leads, then the syndrome we are dealing with is something more than just anterior T-wave inversion, but rather the syndrome of giant T-waves. And while giant T-waves can be ischemic from acute coronary disease, we need to expand our differential diagnosis when we see giant T-waves to include things like Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, also known as stress cardiomyopathy or broken heart syndrome, apical cardiomyopathy, which is a variant form of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, albeit an uncommon one outside of Japan, Stokes-Adams attacks in which there is severe bradycardia and complete AV block, post-tachycardia syndrome in which dramatic ST segment and T-wave changes can be seen for hours or longer following a sustained tachyarrhythmia, and or any of a variety of CNS catastrophes, including among others stroke, coma, and intracerebral or subarachnoid bleed. But I wanted to focus on more modest anterior T-wave inversion in the patient who presents with shortness of breath with or without a history of recent or acute chest pain. Is this Wellen syndrome? There are two ECG patterns that have been recognized in the literature as representing Wellen syndrome. I favor the use of only one of these patterns to define true Wellen syndrome. In a patient with the right clinical history, that is, cardiac-sounding chest pain recently, but which has resolved at the time an ECG is done that shows no more than slight anterior ST elevation, but no sign yet of any definite infarction, that is, no anterior Q waves and troponins that are no more than minimally elevated, the picture of an unusually steep downslope of the ST segment into an inverted T wave is predictive of a tight proximal LAD stenosis. And that is the purpose of Wellen syndrome, namely to predict a tight LAD stenosis before it has gone on to evolve into a large anterior infarction. After the infarct has occurred, reperfusion T waves may look identical to the T wave pattern of this form of Wellen syndrome. In contrast, the other ECG pattern described in the literature as consistent with Wellen syndrome is, in my opinion, not helpful, and I don't use it. The second ECG pattern is the presence of symmetric anterior T-wave inversion without that unusually steep T-wave descent that I just described. The problem with the second ECG pattern is that it is not specific for a tight proximal LAD narrowing. Patients who manifest this pattern may have coronary disease, including disease in the LAD, but not necessarily a tight proximal LAD stenosis. And many patients who manifest anterior T-wave inversion do not have coronary disease at all. But my purpose in presenting this audio pearl is that the possibility of acute PE as the cause of anterior T-wave inversion is all too often ignored. This brings up the pros and cons of the ECG as a tool for recognizing acute PE. Overall, the ECG is not good for detecting acute PE, in that the ECG is not likely to identify patients with smaller PEs. That said, this may be a blessing in disguise, since one can debate whether many of those smaller subsegmental PEs are truly of clinical consequence. It's important to emphasize that the ECG is much better at detecting larger QPEs, and that these are the PEs that are likely to be hemodynamically significant. But in order to recognize these larger PEs on ECG, we need to know what to look for. A decided advantage of the ECG is that it can be done quickly, often before results are available from lung scan or chest CT. No single ECG finding is specific for the diagnosis of acute PE, but a combination of ECG findings that occur in the clinical setting of a patient predisposed to developing acute PE can be highly suggestive. So, if the PE is large, then expect to see sinus tachycardia. New onset atrial fibrillation is another arrhythmia that may sometimes signal development of acute PE. One of the most important ECG findings to recognize is the appearance of ST-T wave changes of RV strain. The two lead areas that may manifest RV strain are the inferior leads and the anterior leads. Of these, RV strain is most commonly seen in the anterior leads, usually in leads V1, V2, and V3, though a lesser degree of ST depression and or T-wave inversion may sometimes extend to more lateral chest leads. It is less common to see RV strain in all three of the inferior leads. As a result, you may sometimes only see T-wave inversion in lead 3, PEARL. When you do see ST depression and or T-wave inversion not only in anterior leads, but also in lead 3, this becomes much more specific for RV strain from acute PE rather than from coronary ischemia. The ECG picture becomes that much more specific for RV strain if ST depression and or T-wave inversion is localized to anterior and to all three of the inferior leads, but is not seen elsewhere. Other ECG signs of acute right heart strain are similar to the ECG findings of RVH. These include one or more of the following: right axis deviation, complete or incomplete right bundle branch block, right atrial abnormality as manifest by P waves that are taller and pointier than expected in the inferior leads or in leads V1 or V2, development of a taller than expected R wave in lead V1, and or persistence of S waves that extend out to lateral chest leads V5 and V6. Finally, there is the finding of an S1, Q3, T3 pattern. By this I mean that all three of these components must be present, namely an S wave in lead 1, and both a Q wave and T wave inversion in lead 3. It doesn't count if only two of these three components are present. I'll emphasize that an S1, Q3, T3 pattern will often not be seen despite the presence of documented PE. And as an isolated ECG finding, an S1, Q3, T3 means nothing, as I've seen this finding in more than a few normal subjects. But in the context of a suspicious clinical history in a patient showing at least a few of the other ECG findings I have just mentioned, the finding of an S1, Q3, T3 pattern adds further support to the diagnosis of acute PE.